It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
It's time once again for the morning show on the Independence Network. Happy Friday. I've got with me my partner in crime, the Saratoga Sledgehammer, Jailbird Joey Correnti. How's it going this morning, Joey?
Well, not too bad, knowing that we're heading into the weekend. I don't know what it is. It's just been a long week recovering from that state convention. I must be getting old. But here we are at the end of the first week since the convention, and ready to get into some other news. Looks like it's going to be a windy day here in Wyoming. Little thunderclouds out there, but if you hear a little hissing in the background from my microphone, I'm just out there on the edge of the prairie, and the wind hits me broadside, and you might pick up a little bit of that, but going to power through, work hard in your free time so you don't have to, and get to some news this morning.
Yeah, so not a lot of Wyoming news happening this morning, but there are some interesting articles. Of course, everybody's heard of the effort to ban TikTok. I'm not exactly sure how they're going to do that. A lot of these tech-savvy kids that use TikTok, it's like they're not going to find a way around whatever method you're going to use to ban it. But I think the more interesting part of this story is, you know, should we be banning TikTok? Not can we be banning it? And some legislators, there was an article, I think it was in the Cowpie, wasn't it, Joey?
Yes, sir.
All right, an article in the Cowpie basically says that legislators are split on whether or not we should be banning TikTok. So I'll let you run with that article and just start us off.
Well, it looks like on Wednesday, President Biden signed a bill into law that came from Congress banning TikTok in the United States and giving them about, 270 days, I believe is the number, to have the Chinese Communist Party sell the platform to another user. And that right there tells me that it's almost a feel-good measure and wants to look like they're doing something. Because who do you think the Chinese are going to sell this to? They're going to sell it to a, you know, red, white, and blue-blooded American who's going to run TikTok, right? No, they're going to sell it to some individual group, company, shell, whatever, that they still control, and the concerns are still going to be there. So right now, TikTok has about 270 days to sell the platform to somebody who isn't the Chinese government. I'm looking down here, Representative Mike Yen from Jackson, the Democrat minority floor leader, is telling us that he believes Congress is overlooking the potential threats from other platforms, not just TikTok's Chinese ownership. And in that case, I kind of agree with him, maybe not in the same way he's saying it. I don't see TikTok itself as a problem. I see the data collection and the way certain data is used as the problem. And I think the answer to the TikTok issue, if you really want to put it into a fundamental principle and apply it equally in all situations, as is my standard, we should just say everything from China is banned in America and watch America go through the withdrawals of Chinese products. But, you know, this isn't the first time we've had problems with stuff from China. Remember the lead in the toys and the poison in the baby formula and all these things. This one just happens to be digital, and there's claimed threats, which are probably credible, that it's a data and a security issue, a national security issue. But this also goes into the user level. I mean, people choose to utilize this app and send each other video. I don't know. I don't TikTok. I don't do any of that stuff. I don't even watch the videos, let alone post my own. But I'm a little concerned about things like the reverse regulation of social media platforms. It should be all or nothing. You know, don't censor or censor everybody. And then when you have access, we have to look at what are the regulations on data collection, data use, and then, you know, basically hacking. If you get this app, it's going to give you access to all these other things on your phone. And the government really can't regulate that because it comes down to user settings. The individual has certain things set in their phone, ask app not to track, turn off your tracking location, all that other stuff that you can do on your own. So if it's a China problem, let's ban everything from China, including Chinese nationals and the government of China owning land, agriculture and infrastructure land.
No, we can't
America,
do that. No.
Well, we tried, but we couldn't do it here in Wyoming.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating the hypocrisy of all of this legislation. You know, we absolutely can't ban China from, or any foreign nation from, owning property right next to F.E. Warren Air Force Base. But we can talk about banning TikTok. I see this from a couple of different levels. First of all, the most sophisticated surveillance device ever invented is carried in almost every single person's pocket every single day. So if you wanted to be, if you want to be monitored, buy a cell phone, upgrade to the new iPhone 27 or whatever it is. The truth is that we're being surveilled all over the place. And unless, as you point out, Joey, unless you are very, very careful, you're going to be susceptible to most of it. You know, apps that turn on your camera automatically, that turn on the microphone on your phone so conversations can be listened to. And TikTok happens to be one of those apps that's fraught with all sorts of security problems. You know, the tracking, the monitoring, and like we've talked about on the program before, really, the government doesn't need the content of your conversations or your emails to determine what's happening. Similarly, companies like TikTok that are interested in surveillance, they really don't need the content either. But there's only one way to ban it, and that would be to ban it outright. The problem I see here is more of a free speech problem. And it's interesting that, you know, the more things change, or the more they stay the same. A lot of the issues that we're talking about are the same type of issues that surrounded the First Amendment when it was written. You know, what type of speech do we allow, or do we allow all speech? And in my view, you have to allow all speech, or you have to be the big brother with the memory hole and, you know, just selectively censoring everything. The only way that free speech actually exists is that if you have the right to be offended. So we have to accept all speech, even the stuff that we detest, or we just have to turn straight dictator and restrict a whole bunch of it. That being said, there are a lot of things in our culture, society, that we restrict from minors. You know, the classic example is the porno mag that's at the truck stop behind the counter covered in black plastic. Why do we do that? Well, it's pornography, and we've determined as a society that that's not acceptable for a minor. There's lots of other things. You can't buy alcohol unless you're 21. Allegedly, you can't go into an R-rated movie unless you're 18. Now you can't buy a can of chew or cigarettes until you're 21. So there's lots of things that we restrict for minors. And if we're going to, you know, restrict an entire company, maybe we should look at the arguments in favor of the First Amendment from the very beginning, because I find it extraordinarily problematic when we're censoring any type of speech. The theory being, in the free marketplace of ideas, that the better ideas will rise to the top and the more deleterious ideas will sink to the bottom. You know, the left uses the example of the KKK all the time. All the time we hear white supremacy this, white supremacy that. But the truth is, the population of people who are white supremacists is actually really, really, really low. And most people, when they look at that type of speech, are going to completely disregard it for what it is, for the trash that it is. And so, I mean, in a perfect world, in theory, you would just let the free marketplace of ideas take over and those ideas that are harmful would sink to the bottom in circulation. The question, though, is the readership or the viewership or the type of person that uses TikTok. I would say predominantly it's used by younger people. I don't know that for a fact, but it just seems logical to me that younger people would use it. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe instead of outright banning it, we need to focus on, you know, age restrictions or something. I don't know how you would do that, but it fits within the free speech rubric that we've had for a very long time.
Yeah, I could see where you're going with that. And we had a bill that did come up in this last legislative session about social media use by minors and how they wanted to regulate that. And still, we didn't see it as enforceable. It comes down to the parents. And you have parents out there that think certain things are okay. And you have parents out there that just don't care. This is the digital babysitter. I threw my kid a tablet or a phone and it shuts them up for 8 hours a day. So really, my concern is some of the hypocrisy or just the language they use to state the intent, data collection, national security issue, people's right to privacy. That's something the American government and the alphabet soup triple letter agencies violate all the time. In fact, there's a court case. I don't know if it's a court case yet or it's just something they're talking about in Congress. Harriet Hageman brought it up the other night that the federal government and these intelligence agencies are not allowed to demand from your communications carrier or the owners of the social media apps that they hand over your data, but they are allowed to buy it. And that's what they've been doing for about 10 years now, is buying all of your metadata, all of the stuff that they say the Chinese want. Well, we're kind of guilty of that too. So if we're going to be, you know, I don't know, avoid hypocrisy on this, say what's what. You're saying we don't want the Chinese to have access to the things that we misuse and weaponize against the American public. The other thing I have a concern about is I've had a security clearance with the government in the past, and there were certain things I just didn't do, certain things I actively avoided in my life because of not only the security clearance that I wanted to maintain, but what I was exposed to with that security clearance. What average American has national security information, you know, going on their phone on a regular basis that they're putting out over TikTok or using in their phone? I think it comes down to, hey, if you work for the government, you have a security clearance. The same way, you know, if you work for a tech company, they don't let certain devices in or out of things and they will sue you. Or in some really interesting movies like The Net and The Pelican Brief, they'll pick you up off the street and kidnap you if you're putting this information out there. No, it's responsibility of the people that actually have information that could be considered a national security threat. And we had problems with leaks in security and, you know, people floating documents to the enemy long before TikTok existed. And I'm not defending the Chinese here. And I think TikTok is stupid personally, but I will defend its right to exist. I don't like that the Chinese own it, but how's it any worse than the crap that Facebook does with its Meta in your everything and selling your information to the FBI so they can do more warrantless searches? This kind of goes back to the FISA conversation we had this week. You know, we're living in a different world. And if you're really interested in protecting Americans and their right to privacy and their constitutional rights, the Fourth Amendment, can't search, can't seize, can't use that information, then start doing it yourself, American government. Then we can worry about the Chinese. But for me, it's all or nothing. I don't think we should be picking and choosing which parts of China we're not going to allow into America. We either say, China, fine, here's the rules for business, or no China in America, period.
Well, and that's an interesting point that you bring up, Joey, because I think a lot of this argument is predicated on, is it a national security risk? Well, I mean, first, if you have a kid that's got a cell, if you were dumb enough to give a kid a cell phone, and I don't know how you would prevent it, but you need to be the responsible parent and be aware of what your kid is doing. You know, the whole example of, you know, I mentioned the pornography magazine a little bit earlier. Well, just about every teenage boy had a Playboy underneath their bed. You know, it's still outlawed, but you still found a way to do it. So, I mean, I don't know how you restrict this, but for me, if it's a national security risk, then let's treat it as it is. But if it's a free speech concern, which I think it's really difficult to separate the two in this case, because a lot of people do communicate on TikTok. I mean, there's lots of business advertisement. Crazily, there's a bunch of people that get their news from TikTok. I mean, talk about being uneducated. But in any case, I mean, anytime there's a free speech concern, I always try to side with more speech and not less speech. And I firmly believe, as I mentioned, you know, when we started this whole segment, that, you know, the free marketplace of ideas should take over. All things being equal, the best ideas will rise to the top. And, you know, I don't know if we're placing too much emphasis on TikTok and not these other social media platforms like Representative Yin brought up, but surely Facebook is a security concern for you, a personal security concern. And, you know, and as a general rule, and I was thinking about this while you were going through this story, Joey, if it is for free, you are the product. You know, none of the things that you engage with on the internet are actually free. You know, if you sign up for a free account, really what that company is doing is selling your data to make a profit, or they're selling your time on that program to advertisers to show you different messages. So literally, you are the product. And so with TikTok, I don't see that as any different. And I mean, parents need to be taking a little bit of responsibility here and taking ownership of their kids. And I mean, it's this, we talk about this all the time on the Independence Network, that with liberty comes responsibility, and you can't have one without the other. So if you're unwilling to monitor what your kids are doing, then, you know, it's I guess maybe you reap the consequences of that. But we need to start taking stock of our freedoms and our liberties and exercising the responsibility that goes along with that.
Yeah. Okay, McFly, let's jump into the DeLorean and head into the future a little bit, because this is step one. What do you think the government will do once we ban TikTok and said it's a national security risk and it's associated with the CCP, and people go and get bootleg or VPN their location to outside the United States to use TikTok anyway? American citizens potentially will be treated as enemy combatants. I don't know if they would be considered terrorists, but definitely some kind of espionage, because you're engaging in something the government has deemed a security risk. So now we're starting to see that brown shirt thing coming. You know, we're going to start creating lists and gathering people up, and you are an active enemy combatant of the United States because you use TikTok. I know it sounds crazy, tinfoil hat, but give it 6 months and wait to see. You know, I am the most accurate conspiracy theorist in the state of Wyoming. I can sit back and throw a dart at the board and just say, well, give it time and it'll be there. This is not the first step, and the impact to the liberty, even without embracing personal responsibility of American citizens, is really my big concern. And what's the next one going to be? You know, are they going to eventually drive us back to the digital world being like TV all the way up into the 80s before cable? You get these three government approved and regulated networks. This is all you're allowed to use. If you do anything else, you know, you're done. So it's definitely concerning, but we're just talking about platform access. We're not even talking about content yet.
Okay, so one of the reasons that on Cowboy State Politics, I make it a point to interview anyone that has moved to our country from a communist regime. And there's several interviews on Cowboy State Politics with Ovi Muntean and our friend Peter from South Dakota. Both of those guys were my guests at our launch party, and both of them moved to our country from communist countries. Ovi Muntean is from Romania, and Peter is, I have a really hard time pronouncing his last name, but anyway, he's from Czechoslovakia. Both of them communist countries.
Peter Vedenka.
Vedenka, that's correct. So, by the way, Peter Vedenka is going to be speaking at the Cowboy Church of the Bighorns on Sunday. It's at the Story Women's Club. If you're listening and you want to go listen to what he has to say, about 10 o'clock. Service starts at 10, and so it'll be from about 10 to, I don't know, noonish. But anyway, my point being is both of them will tell you stories of how individual citizens who have absolutely no influence on how the government operates or any government policy could literally be scooped up in the middle of the night for listening to the wrong radio program. Hovey Muntean tells a really great story how his father would turn the government-approved radio on in the front next to the door, and then they'd go into the cellar and listen to Radio Free America. Because if they were found out to be listening to anything that was not approved by the regime, they were going to prison, which usually meant 40 years in a work camp or death. So to think that those things can't happen in the United States is absolutely a ridiculous notion. They can happen here, and it starts with, you know, restricting free speech and monitoring all this. Like Joey said, you can throw a dart at a map and find out what's going to happen. A good example of this, and this is kind of switching topics a little bit, from the Pravda on the Platte. An article entitled FCC Votes to Restore Net Neutrality Rules. And this one's in the printed version of the Pravda, which every, by the way, Joey, every time that bill comes through my bank account, it just makes me cringe because they charge way too much for it. It's not worth the paper it's printed on. But, you know, being in the business I'm in, I have to know what the Pravda is saying. Anyway, the FCC has voted to restore net neutrality, and this is a really, really quick little blurb of an article, so I'll just read it to you. The Federal Communications Commission restored net neutrality rules Thursday that prevent broadband internet providers from favoring some sites and apps over others. TikTok. The move effectively reinstates a net neutrality order the commission first issued in 2015 under the Obama administration. The FCC repealed it in 2017 under then-President Donald Trump. The telecommunications industry opposed the reintroduction of the rules, declaring them unnecessary government interference in business decisions. Net neutrality is the principle that providers of internet service should treat all traffic equally. The rules ban practices that throttle or block certain sites or apps, or that offer higher speeds to customers who pay extra. The measure passed on a 3-2 vote, with Democrat commissioners on one side and then Republicans on the other being opposed to it. Net neutrality is a super scary principle has been a jewel of the left in this country for a long time. And essentially what it says is you have to offer equal time to both sides of an issue. Now, this article only tells you that it's about access to internet or apps. But if you read the full rule as it was released in 2015, it goes all the way down to content providers. So your television station, radio station, and for right now, the internet is largely unregulated, but with this new rule, I think that we could see some more regulations coming down on folks like us. So to put it in simple terms, if I do an advertisement for a Republican, net neutrality would say that I have to offer the same, I have to give the same airtime to somebody on the other side. So in other words, I have to take it in the shorts and give them advertising because I sold it to, you know, a more conservative outlet. Or if I'm covering a subject that, you know, is critical of the Democrats, well, I have to offer and do a story that is critical of the Republicans. It is the fairness doctrine that Rush Limbaugh used to talk about.
Absolutely. And I love that the new rules don't get highlighted on the all the way down to the end user and content provider and creator level. They don't point it out, even though it's in these rules. This is the same thing as the equality and social and civic issues that we see here in America. They are not talking about equality. It sounds real good. Net neutrality. Everybody gets the same. You don't get faster internet just because you pay more or you live in a more populated area. It's forced equality based on an expectation of the outcome, not everybody. Hey, you are allowed, and this should be the only rule, there is no law against you acquiring internet access or posting or listening to whatever you want. They're trying to force a balance, which never works, in content that comes out digitally. And what do you think? The government's going to sit there and look at the full spectrum and say, okay, the internet is finally balanced. Or an internet service provider is going to say, okay, all the content that runs through us, no, we need a little more conservative content. Okay, now we're balanced. No, they're going to stick it to people like you and me, because things like podcasts and digital radio have started to take off. They're going to say you have to provide content that is balanced 50-50, and they will force us to do it so that none of them actually have to do the work. And it is what you said. It's the fairness doctrine. That would require that. I don't know if it's giving away. My concern is doing what we do. I can't find enough people on the other side that are willing to talk, or even willing to talk to me, to get close to a balance. You know, I don't pull any punches in the intro to my show every day. Welcome to the home of liberty-minded constitutional conservatism. You know, not a lot of people on the other side are going to want to come on this show. Are we going to have to give 3 hours a day to Mike Yen and Chris Rothfuss? Is that what the federal government's saying? Last time I checked, we own this business, and we have listeners that choose to listen to us. So, yeah, this is a big, big issue. It does go back to, you know, the actual content and kind of a veiled, I wouldn't call it censorship. It's a forced equality that obviously never works. Let's look at everything from affirmative action to DEI. You cannot force equality in outcome and have it be a legitimate result. And I wouldn't say I'm afraid of this. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know how you square it with the Constitution, the principles of capitalism, freedom, liberty, the right to earn and use your own money the way you see fit. There's just a series of issues with this. And also here in Wyoming, because the net neutrality specifically talks about broadband access, how are you going to get high-speed broadband access in rural Wyoming that equals anybody who just happens to live in Denver? You know, we were talking the other day here at the 1776 Audio Foundry Studios. I max out at about 8 megabytes per second, and you run normal at 120, and I'm paying for the top package that I could get in my area. The infrastructure alone that the government is committing itself to, and remember, this isn't a law. This didn't go through Congress. This is a rule from a bureaucratic agency. Basically, that rule says they need to start digging up the roads here in Saratoga and put in some fiber optic, because I should at least be able to get the same internet speed that David has in Sheridan, which in reality, your internet ain't that great either. You know, go to LA, go to Denver, go to New York. They have gigabytes per second speeds out there. So I think we're committing ourselves to, through bureaucratic rules, things that are unattainable, unaffordable, unenforceable, really just to look good. It's more virtue signaling of, look, we're forcing equality. And remember, internet access, it's not a utility and it's not a constitutional right. It's a luxury. I get it. It's embedded in our lives. We couldn't do our business without internet access, but we pay for it because it's not a right to have internet access. So we're going to have to look at a lot of this stuff and see how it all, you know, touches on other things. But ultimately what it comes down to is more government control over your access to information, what information you can access it, and how much more money they can spend and put us into debt on by giving people who have options to get internet, just don't want to pay for it themselves.
Put simply, this is forced equality based on equity. Now, those two terms mean opposite things. I mean, words mean things.
2 + 2 = 4, not 5 if you want it to be 5. And this is not to be discriminatory. This is to stand up for language. Words mean things.
Words mean things. Equality and equity are two entirely different terms. Equality means equality of opportunity, that everybody has the same opportunity to do whatever it is that they want, succeed in any way, but it's entirely up to the individual. Equity is an economic term. For example, if you get a house loan for $200,000 and you pay it down to where you only owe $100,000, well, then you theoretically have $100,000 worth of equity. Equity is an outcome. And so when you're looking at things like net neutrality, it becomes pretty simple. And let me attack this by a couple of interviews that I set up last night. One candidate I spoke at great length to, and I had to make some what I consider to be extraordinary concessions to get that person to come on the program. And essentially what I had to do was say, okay, I'm going to interview both candidates. I'm not going to give you the questions ahead of time. I will keep the other interview in the can until I have completed both of them so that neither of you know what the other said. In my mind, I made some pretty significant concessions on my program just so that I could get two opposing viewpoints on the program. But what net neutrality says is whatever concessions I made don't really matter. If I don't have the other viewpoint, then I'm already in violation. So both Joey and I have a conservative program, and you know, there are some people who just don't want to come on the program. By the way, it's been something like 2,242 days, I don't know if that's the exact number, since Landon Brown agreed to come on Cowboy State Politics and then didn't show up. There's no way he's ever going to come on this program. But as far as net neutrality is concerned, that doesn't matter. The fact that I didn't have him on the program is the only thing that is going to be taken into consideration. So let me tell you how this is going to play out. You have a conservative program like mine or Joey's, and we don't have two opposing viewpoints on the program with equal time. And so whether or not the person agreed or whether or not we could get somebody on the program isn't going to figure into the equation. The only thing that is going to be considered is that we didn't have the opposing viewpoint on the program. And what is going to happen, forced equality based on equity, we will be fined for something somebody else did not want to do. So this doesn't have anything to do with free speech or equity or equality. Really, it's an attempt, as it always has been since Rush Limbaugh first started talking about the fairness doctrine. It has nothing to do with fairness. It has everything to do with tamping down conservative speech or speech that they disagree with. And the reason why we can call it conservative speech is that we all know that liberal talk radio is a loser. Nobody wants to listen to it. The biggest programs in the United States are all conservative programs. Given enough time, I could probably come up with the Alec Baldwin soundbite where he's on the radio and he doesn't have any listeners. And through about, you know, 3 minutes of the program, all he does is go, so do we have any listeners? Hey, if you want to call in, we can talk. Nope, no listeners. So my point being here is that this isn't fair. It isn't neutral. It isn't neutral. And it is going to be used against people like Joey and I and any other conservative host in America that can't convince somebody from the other side to come on their program. It's forced equality based on equity.
Yeah, fun stuff. The only time Alec Baldwin was shooting blanks is when he was on the radio. Anyway, good job there, killer. A couple other examples. We had a forum for U.S. House of Representatives here in Carbon County back in 2022. We invited everybody, including Liz Cheney. And I had to go way out of my way to make sure that every candidate was getting the same email, make sure they all had the same, you know, access to any of the, not the questions, but the rules, the invitation. Anytime one of them replied to me, I replied to all so everybody could see what was going on. And Liz Cheney still didn't show. Obviously, she wouldn't show up. This was the place where it all started, the beginning of the end for her. But you covered that and broadcast it on your podcast. And you wouldn't be able to do that just because Liz Cheney didn't show up, even though they're all claimed to be conservative. They all claim to be on the same side of things. But that was the opposing view, was Liz Cheney. So that would have been a problem. And people on the left and the rhinos who think, oh, yeah, well, you're complaining because you want to continue to be one-sided and blah, blah, blah. Hey, it would work against you, too. When Natrona County had their little outing Wild Rhino event, they could have still had the event, but when they took that video and that audio and gave it to Cowboy State Daily, they streamed it over Facebook, they wouldn't have been able to do that because the opposing view did not show up. They would have just had to have shut all electronics down and had the event for the people present. So it's a knife that cuts both ways. And I'd really hate to see it happen, because we do take a lot of personal responsibility for our content here. We're honest about it. We do one thing that a lot of people don't do. We even lead with our mistakes, but that's still not going to be enough for these goofballs. They literally want to control or destroy anything that doesn't meet their concept of balance. And what it really is to give a foothold to that lame-ass liberal talk radio and hopefully force them into some kind of relevancy. It has nothing to do with something we're doing wrong. It has to do with the failure of their side to actually grab a foothold in this market.
I want to correct one thing that you just said, Joey. The truth is, those folks on the other side would be allowed to broadcast that stuff. They would be allowed to stream it because they happen to be on the side of those folks that are in power. This is the danger of this thing. I mean, nobody can deny, no honest person can deny that there's selective prosecution all over the place in America, all the way from Donald Trump down to Kristi Haswell in Sheridan County and Bill Novotny, who, if anybody else, any conservative, had done anything close to that, they'd probably still be in jail, or at least they'd spent, you know, the mandatory 6 months or whatever it is. You couple net neutrality with selective prosecution, and what will happen, again, throwing the little dart at the area that I already know is going to have a result, the Democrat viewpoint, the liberal viewpoint, well, we won't have any problem with those. It's the conservatives that we'll go after because, you know, they didn't offer both sides of the issue and we have these rules, and they'll completely ignore everything on the other side. But once in a while, Joey, there is a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and again. And we've got a disgraced former nightly news anchor that's decided to come back to television, his triumphant return after 18 years, Mr. Dan Rather. Now, he left his nightly news program, and excuse me, it was the CBS Evening News, back from a time when news anchors were actually trusted, when, you know, people actually sat down and watched the evening news because they got used to listening to Walter Cronkite, who wasn't fair and balanced in any way, shape, or form. But Dan Rather had to leave his CBS Evening News position because he reported on a memo that criticized then President George W. Bush's military service. And they ran with the story. And now just do some comparison for me here, Joey. Think about Trump. Think about all the stuff that they've done to him. And then compare it to this. So in that report, They ran with the memo, and let me just read from the article here. This is from Fox News. Quote, just ahead of the then president's reelection, and again, that's George W., the anchor ran a 60-minute special citing forged memos disparaging Trump Bush's behavior while he served in the National Guard in the 1970s, allegedly written by his commanding officer at the time. Critics charged that these documents were forged as part of a naked attempt to make Bush look bad 2 months before the 2004 election. After initially defending the memos, Rather and CBS eventually acknowledged the authenticity of the documents was never verified and should not have been used. Rather apologized for the scandal ahead of a CBS investigation into the allegations of journalistic malpractice. He stepped down from his role as anchor of CBS Evening News months after the scandal. He eventually parted ways with CBS 2 years later. So now he's coming back and he's doing an interview about journalism. Now, the reason I asked you to compare these two, Joey, is Dan Rather was ousted over a false memo that couldn't be verified, and it was determined that that was against journalistic practices. Do you think that sort of thing would happen now?
Well, I guess the only thing I can say is it wouldn't have happened that way for Dan Rather if he was just simply an administrative assistant in Hot Springs County School District, and it was just an administrative error, not a problem. It was a little paperwork thing, and, you know, we give so much grace and cover to people that don't do their job now. When you look back at stuff like this, you think, wait a minute, I don't even remember the transition, but we used to have some personal accountability in journalism. This wasn't about them firing him. This was about Dan Rather being so embarrassed that he stepped away from the tenets of true journalism that he could not continue to do the job personally. And I don't know if him being back is a good thing, a bad thing. I don't know what his, you know, docuseries or whatever on journalism is going to be, but I'd be interested in seeing that in compared to what we see on a regular basis today. This is one of the reasons why I actively disclaim the title journalist. And I don't even like to say I'm a member of the press. Okay, I'm digital media. I'm media. Okay. But I admit straight up front, I'm a commentator. I'm cantankerous. I back it up. But it really, the whole concept of journalism has been so lost. And I know you have the definition, people who write down and journal the events of the day. That's the definition. That's the word that means something. But I don't want anything to do with it because of where journalism has gone nowadays. And you know what? I don't know that I can remember back any detail in Dan Rather being good, bad, liberal, neutral, conservative, whatever. But, you know, he was kind of a staple in my life growing up. I always saw him on the news and felt like you could trust him. And I'll be interested in hearing what he's got to say. But I do know that the same internal or industry accountability that Dan Rather went through is not what the standard is today.
No, it's not. And you could probably take, I think, the person who is arguably one of the more prominent media, political media figures. Let's talk about Trotsky for a minute. How many articles do you think we could come up with that have something that's absolutely not true in them? Or that's a fabrication, or that is a distortion? I would bet we could probably take 75% of the stuff that he's written and find something wrong with it, factually. But there's no accountability, and even when that guy is, you know, we make a loud noise about what he has written, you hardly ever see a retraction that's been printed by the Cowpie, or published by the Cowpie, I should say. They don't print their news. In fact, I only know of one of them, and it was a quotation from me. Now, they've printed other, you know, added editor's notes to different articles, basically arguing against conservatives. But as far as saying, oops, we goofed, here's what actually happened, I only know of one time that happened. But there's no accountability for the media whatsoever. Let me give you another example. You remember Peter Jennings? I don't remember which program, NBC Nightly News, I think that's the program that he was on. So he told a story on air where he was going into a war zone in a helicopter, and one helicopter was shot down, and they got his landed, and you know, he had to duck and cover running away from the helicopter under enemy fire. Well, none of that actually happened. And Peter Jennings.
Yeah, Hillary's story about snipers on the airfield. I remember all that, yeah.
Yeah, so Peter Jennings pretty much got the same fate as Dan Rather, except that Peter Jennings didn't lose his job. He just lost his position. So there was a time when we did have some journalistic standards. And let me just explain real quickly why I'm okay calling myself a journalist. Because on occasion, I do actual journalism. And I use it as a comparison to what the mainstream media does. This is what they give you. This is what I give you. Here's the facts. Here's the data. Here's all of the articles that I got it from. In some instances, here's the video that I'm reporting on. I don't see it as, I mean, I think that most people's conception of journalism is a negative one, but it's my attempt to say, no, there still are real journalists. There are still people that want to report the facts either way. I had an interesting conversation with a fairly prominent conservative down at the convention, and we were talking to someone who is arguably on the other side. And I made the comment, I said, oh, no, trust me, I'm fair and balanced. You know, when I'm reporting things factually, I do my best to do that. And I said, and if you want to know the truth, I'm actually harder on conservatives because they know better. And the prominent Wyoming conservative that was standing there kind of laughed and said, oh, yeah, he definitely is. I've been on the receiving end of it. You know, so there, I think, and I want to believe that there still is something called journalism, and that's why I make an effort to try to do it. And why I'm not scared of the term. I'm not saying you're scared. You're a commentator. But anyway, you know, there is still journalists that work today. And I think it's interesting that this article comes up 18 years after it happened, when we actually did have standards.
Well, as long as we don't have Connie Chung coming back, we should be okay. Because, hey, we're trying to ban everything Chinese and make sure that America's safe. So, Dan, rather cool. Connie Chung, hey, just stay out there with Maury Povich. You'll be fine. The other thing Maury we do Povich. That other places don't, that's her husband, right? I think so. I don't remember. So you brought up the term fair and balanced. The only reason I don't use that one is because, first of all, it's a tagline for Fox News. And second of all, we spend all day talking about words mean things. And I don't know what fair and balanced means to most people. You know, it can vary. Well, you said something I didn't like, so it wasn't fair and it's not balanced, even though you provided facts and data. This is why we hold to our standard of please do not take our word for it. I don't know any other even media outlet, let alone news conglomerate, anything you're going to get out there that says, don't take our word for it. Please check into this. Do your own homework. Come up with your own and interact with us. Tell us where you think we're wrong. I beg, actually don't have to anymore, but I beg for emails, comments, complaints, concerns, questions, and, you know, critiques all the time. And I don't hear other media sources, news outlets doing that. We're willing to expose ourselves and our content to that kind of criticism and correction. We always lead with our mistakes. So I think a couple of simple principles that we embody here could fix a lot of these issues in quote unquote journalism very easily. But there is this sense of pride, and we saw it at the convention, the media elitism. Oh, David Iverson is just entertainment. He's not actual news. Okay, yeah. Fine. Call me whatever you want to call me, but address the content. You know, this is another reason I stay away from the term journalist. It's like, you know what? I don't want to live up to your false standards that you claim and don't live up to yourself. If you look on the Wyoming Press Association website, they have all the journalistic standards and expectations that almost none of their member papers meet or embody on a regular basis. So why would I want to be part of another hypocritical organization or industry when I can just say, no, here's my rules, here's my standards, and I will live up to these. And if you think I need to change them or I've failed to, tell me about it. I will put you on the air, at least your content, your concerns, your complaints, your critiques, and we'll let the people decide, because we're begging them. If you want us to be fair and balanced, you want us to we report, you decide. We're giving you that opportunity here and saying, please don't ever be in an argument and say, well, David Iverson said, and my favorite one, never do anything where you end up in front of a judge and say, well, Jailbird Joey said it was okay. You do not want to be there. Trotsky is not going to come save you when you're on the losing end of an argument based on anything he said. So remember that. Again, it goes back to personal responsibility. And I think we embrace that personal responsibility for what we do pretty well here at the Independence Network.
Fair enough. Well, another story that I saw this morning, Joey, is do you know that wolves watch out for state lines?
Well, yeah, especially when, you know, they're down there. I saw that map you sent down there in Colorado. You know, the wolves maybe pick up a couple of those wild growing bud leaves on their coat, and they know they can't transport marijuana into the state of Wyoming. So they go right up to the northern border of Larimer County, stop and turn back. They never cross that border.
No.
You know, that would be,
it'd be illegal.
Yeah.
But there's a report out that Colorado wolves have not gone into Wyoming. You know, they have this wolf tracking system. And the state of Colorado puts out this map, and I'll post it at cowboystatepolitics.com. But the map, it shows an area that is too roughly, and just looking off the scale on the map, don't count these numbers, but roughly 200 miles wide by 100 miles long. And that's the area that the tracked wolves have traversed. Well, the only problem is at the top of the map, there is a straight line right at the border of Wyoming. Nope, wolves haven't gone into our state. Well, there's a news report, video news update report thing from the CowPie, and let me just play you a segment of it.
Well, since wolves were released in Colorado in late December, there's been speculation over when they might cross into Wyoming. Outdoors reporter Mark Hines says the latest tracking data suggests they might be coming right up to the state line or possibly crossing it.
The Colorado Parks and Wildlife, they've been putting out monthly what they call wolf activity maps since they released the 10 wolves there in December. And basically, this is just taking these wolves that they released all had tracking collars on them. It's taking the tracking data and kind of showing where they've been around the state. The maps could be a little general because they don't go by specific location, they go by drainage. In other words, if a wolf has been in a drainage, that drainage is marked as having, the entire drainage is marked as having wolf activity in it. So we can't be for sure. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is being a little secretive about the exact location of the wolves, I think simply because they want the wolves to be left alone, not harassed, that sort of thing.
Wolves remain fully protected in Colorado and may not be hunted by the public. If they cross into southern Wyoming, though, they'll be in the Cowboy State's predator zone for wolves. That means they may be killed on sight at any time.
I love the space music in the background.
Yeah, that's fun. Hey, they got to jazz up their liberal talk radio any way they can, right?
But so the reason I bring this up is wolves, as everybody in Wyoming knows, have been a sore subject for, I don't know, 30 years, 20 years, however long it's been since they introduced them into Yellowstone National Park. But the reason why the map is important is it hasn't been that long since wolves were released in Colorado, and it's only been a couple of months. And in that short period of time, they've traversed an area that's roughly 200 miles wide by 100 miles long. That's a huge area. And to assume that those wolves haven't gone into Wyoming, you know, I know they have their tracking collars on them, is absolutely ridiculous. And perhaps the only reason why they don't have any data that the wolves have crossed into Wyoming is we have rightfully shot them. So I don't know. Just another ridiculous report. Anything that comes out of Colorado is suspect, in my opinion, including the Colorado Rockies and the Denver Broncos. So just chalk them all up there together. Their map is bullcrap, just like their sports teams.
I'm going to push back against that a little bit. This is not dealing in reality. This is dealing in legal language. Colorado might be right, because Colorado wolves couldn't possibly cross over the border into Wyoming. And as we look at this map, we're talking everything in Wyoming along the southern border from Rawlins east. That is the 200 miles where this map goes, right up to the state line, and apparently these wolves stop. No, Colorado wolves can't come into Wyoming, because once they do, they're no longer Colorado wolves. They're Wyoming wolves. According to Wyoming State Statute 23-1-103, ownership of wildlife, all wildlife in Wyoming is the property of the state. Any and all Wyoming wildlife classified in this act as big or trophy game animals, or any wolf or wolf hybrid, is property of the state of Wyoming. So we don't have Colorado wolves coming into Wyoming. We have anchor wolves who are immediately citizens and residents of the state of Wyoming as soon as they cross the line, based on our state statute, you know, especially if they come here and have, you know, wolf pups. Those baby wolves are definitely Wyoming wolves. So we don't have Colorado wolves here. They're Wyoming citizens and residents and able to register at the courthouse to vote as soon as they get here, based on that statute. So, you know, there are no lines. I mean, we have these imaginary lines on maps that people don't even recognize when they're doing, all the way down to property lines. So I don't think you could say legitimately these wolves aren't crossing the line, but, you know, their identity as soon as they do cross that line, based on this statute, is, hey, those are Wyoming wolves. That's why we rightly kill them when they're over here. We're not killing Colorado wolves. We're killing predators that are the property of the state of Wyoming.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing about repopulating species, and first of all, the wolves that they're releasing aren't native species to this part of North America. And, you know, neither are the wolves that are in Yellowstone, or not in Yellowstone anymore. They're not native species, and there's a reason why they didn't live here. And so if you're wondering why ranchers have problems with wolves killing livestock and, you know, domestic animals being killed by wolves, well, it's because those critters are predators, and there's a reason why they're on the list. They're no different than skunks, coyotes, feral cats, you name it. Just need to shoot them and clear them out. They can exist somewhere else, just not here.
Yeah, that's fun. The invasion of those from the south. Luckily, they're not coming in buses. Apparently, that's why they're not limited to crossing over on I-25, because they're coming over on foot.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyway, let's see what else we got here for today. Looks like Mark Meckler was back in Cheyenne peddling the Article 5 convention. We've talked about that plenty in the past, but I don't see how this effort is still so active in Wyoming, not only after it was handily defeated in a forum or debate with the illustrious from high above there a couple months ago, but multiple attempts to sneak Article 5 funding and support into the budget and its own legislative bills last year failed miserably. I mean, take some time and recoup. Don't come selling the same bill of goods that we've just voted down multiple times. I don't get what they don't get about this effort is at least dead for now in Wyoming, and we may need to wait till after the election season to address an Article 5 convention in Wyoming again.
It's a pretty good competition between Mark Meckler and the Convention of States efforts in our legislature and Nancy Case's efforts on Medicaid expansion. I think their record is pretty close to the same. And in this past legislative session, by my count, they tried it four times, maybe three times. But anyway, there was a couple of times they tried to slip it into the budget. I don't know what that has to do with the budget, but Dan Zwanitzer doesn't care about rules anyway. But anecdotal reports from people that were at Mark Meckler's little get-together pretty much say that it had the same result as him trying to debate me in front of the Senate Corporations Committee. If you need a refresher, go back and listen to that episode. After Meckler got all frustrated with me, he called me a communist baby killing. I can't even remember what he finished it up with, but it was pretty nasty. The truth is that this is a dead issue in the state, and you have to understand that Convention of States, that organization, is a marketing organization. The literal name of it is Convention of States Action. They're no different than a lobbying group, any other lobbying group. They spend money in elections, and they go against candidates that don't support their ideas. So my guess is the reason Mark Meckler he's made several stops in Cheyenne in the last few years. He's trying to rally support from legislators there, and my guess is they'll be spending a lot of money to do it. So what we need to do is just continue to educate people on how bad this idea is. To that end, a little shameless plug. On the 29th of April in Cheyenne at 6:30 at the Salt Life Church, that's this upcoming Monday, Leah Southwell and I will be there discussing how we don't need a convention of states, that all of the solutions that we're looking for are in the Constitution. So if you're looking for something to do in Cheyenne, I'll be down there on Monday the 29th, 6:30 at the Salt Life Church in Cheyenne. Come on down. I've actually, unlike some people who don't do fair and balanced stuff, there will be a couple of representatives from the Convention of States there so that we can have a substantive discussion about the rightness or wrongness of that idea. So come on down if you want to spend an evening talking politics with us.
Yeah, David wants to go talk politics in a church. That means, yep, we're going to hear another op-ed from future former legislator Jerry Obermueller about the separation that you're not recognizing there. Church and state, church and state, church and state. Anyway, got about 45 seconds left in the show. This morning on Just Blame Joey Live, you're going to get the latest episode of Wide Right Turn with Tom Kelly. We've got a hot new episode of Crosstalk Live coming at 1 p.m. And what do you got on Cowboy State Politics this morning, David?
Oh, it's going to be one of those days bouncing around the national news. Of course, we got to talk about the Supreme Court hearing yesterday a little bit. There's been a whole bunch of analysis on that since it aired. And I've got a couple other stories, Title IX stuff. Biden has allegedly taken 200 actions against oil and gas. So a whole bunch of stuff coming up on Cowboy State Politics Live, which stay tuned. It's next.